Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and I am here this afternoon on the workforce. And I've got with me Mr. Al Anderson from the Whalers. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing well, sir.
Very good.
Thank you.
Good. Now, the Whalers are going to be at the Richfield Playhouse, and that is going to be happening on Sunday, October 9th. And we're looking so forward to having you come down, man. I mean, the classics, man. No Woman, No Cry, One Love. Tell me about your involvement with the Whalers.
Well, in 1973, I met Bob Marley through a substitution guitarist. Gave me the opportunity because of his bad health. They chose another guitar player to work with. And if he had played on the Nacho Dread album that I substituted on, I have no history with Bob Marley. So the heavens were good that day that Paul Kossoff let me substitute for him. That's where I met Bob Marley, and I produced and played on 6 songs from the Nacho Dread album that were all number one hits in England and spread throughout the world from, you know, Jamaica to England.
Right, right. Now, are you from Jamaica, or are you from England?
Homegrown here in America, from New York.
America, from New York. Oh, my brother.
Harlem, straight to Brick City, New York, New Jersey, where my father was born.
Oh, cool, man. Well, New York City, they probably got more Jamaicans than in Jamaica, brother. You know?
That's true. That's real.
So,
thank God for that.
So, in any case, so tell me, when did you fall in love, with reggae and just the Jamaican culture?
Well, in England, I wasn't so familiar with it because I was more of an African highlife guitarist. I was playing in a group called Shakatu, being produced by Chris Blackwell at Island Records. And through highlife music via in Nigeria, I got familiar with Jamaican music from Africa to Jamaica.
Okay. Yes.
And I had the opportunity to meet Bob Marley. He liked where I was going musically and asked me to join his new group because he was departing from Peter and Bunny and he wanted younger and newer sounds in his music. And I chose to be subordinate in his band and I went right along with it and did countless tours, albums, and had a wonderful career working with the Whalers. And here I am. They're responsible for what I am right now.
I got a question for those people in the audience that don't really know the history of reggae and Bob Marley. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Bob Marley started with One Cup of Coffee was his first song. I believe he was 16 years old. His mother always said that he was very poetic and could put words together that were more like a message than, you know, like a song that had messages in the song and had great meaningful hooks. At a very early age, he was capable of putting this type of thing together. He wasn't so versed musically, but what he knew was self-contained grace at songwriting and being a leader. And that's something that I hadn't really seen anybody put together music from their social background. I saw him do things. I saw him behave certain ways, and he put his behavior and his being in his songwriting, and I saw it, I witnessed it, and few people were doing. Stevie Wonder is another, and, you know, who's a visionary, because he's not having vision. He's totally internal. You know, he's nocturnal inside himself, so there's a powerful being, and Bob was the same. Because he always wanted to be a singer like Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder, but God gave him the talent to sing and send messages, and he did it correctly on behalf of his beliefs, and he sacrificed himself for his country also. An amazing being.
Yeah, that's
amazing, man.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, he was one of those cats that, you know, really was able to, you know, to embrace his culture. And despite what, you know, pop culture was all about, you know, and the formulas that, you know, made you a star, he kind of forsake, you know, that. And in fact, you know, went on to did it his way, right?
He was way beyond these guys. He was getting politicians elected in Africa with his mind and his words, along with politicians in the Caribbean, mostly Jamaica. He got Michael Manley too.
Yes.
4-year terms, 8 years over Eddie Seaga. So Bob was a very, very powerful speaker.
Yes. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
He was a very powerful speaker, person, and he had a lot of spiritual depth.
You know, how much of his Rastafarian background and, you know, his belief in the Rastafarian movement and religion was, you know, important to his music?
100%. There was no compromise. It was always, it was all over him. It was around him. You could smell it. He was a spiritual and a very deep individual who would sacrifice himself for his world and his culture, and he did.
How
pretty
had,
much like
yes, I'm sorry. I'm
pretty
sorry.
Much like pretty much like Martin Luther King, I would say that Peter Tosh was Malcolm X, and Bob spoke the words of Martin Luther King, and that's the difference between the two of them. And Bunny was Moses, so you can imagine having these guys, these three individuals in one band.
Wow. So tell me how does that affected your life and your experience? You know, what have you gotten out of just being able to meet this man and now play his music, right? Tell me how that's affected you.
Okay, I met him 1973, like September, October, no, November, December. And I did the record really fast because I felt the music and I knew exactly what he wanted, and I gave him what he needed, and I had an opportunity to help produce the music that he was making at that time. Six songs from the production went to number one in England and became popular throughout the world. Luckily, just from the spirit of the individual, you know, I really felt that this guy was saying something musically, and I would be musically subordinate to his music and the culture of his music in Jamaica. I not only worked with him, I worked with countless other artists, Dennis Brown, Gregory Isaacs, Inner Circle, Peter Tosh, Robbie and Sly. I have a wide variety. Chinna Smith, who's a great guitarist producer. Cat Core, another super. Stephen Stewart. It just goes on, you know. I had a great opportunity to have something to do with the music that I was not familiar with whatsoever. But I met Bob in October, November, and had no idea once I left England to join him in Jamaica what this journey would be. You know, Blackwell's record company said that there would be accommodations, car, per diems. I got there. No. I flew from England to Delaware to his mother's house. I slept on a sofa there for 2 months. Until he was finishing up all his work to get this record distributed from Jamaica and England. So we went from Delaware, which was his mother's house, with his two brothers, Richie and Anthony. And I went to Jamaica with him. And the first night I got to Norman Manley Airport from England, I never had a bed, food, nothing. It was my beginning on just like being homeless in a world of, it was a wonder world. I had no idea what was going to go down. All I know is he took me to many hotels. He didn't pay for the hotel bedding. I don't think he had money at this time. He couldn't afford a guitarist. He couldn't afford having like, you know, somebody to be responsible for. And at that time, 73 December. When I was initially being involved with him. So he achieved Hope Road, the studio, and the museum, and I slept on the floor on a piece of cardboard for a year and a half waiting for Chris Blackwell to release the Nazi Dread album, which became ultimately one of the great icons of the collection of Island Records. And I had the experience was like how he grew up. He came to Kingston, apparently, from Nine Mile on a donkey. That was his transportation. And before he went on his journey, he was living way beyond the means that I did when I joined him. I had no idea that I would be homeless. I was basically homeless, sleeping on the floor, waiting for a record distributor in England to distribute a record with probably one of the most iconic songwriters. There was many times I wanted to leave, quit, go away, but I said, stomach it, live like these people live here. And I got to love Jamaica more so than home, Harlem, wherever I consider home. Jamaica was my home at that point. People took me in. Some didn't like me because I was, let's say, different from different language, different clothing, different attitude. And some loved me because they wanted me to work. I wanted Jamaica to be musically subordinate to that culture and to these songwriters and singers there. I didn't care about how I had to live. Sometimes I was so skinny, man, I had no food. I didn't have no money. I didn't have shit. I just slept on the floor and got up and went to the studio and worked for these cats for years. And all of a sudden, the guy from England distributes the record, and it's a big hit. And that was my start, just like that. No food, no money, no car, all the arrangements and amenities that I got from Island Records, I never got when I got to Kingston. I lived just like those poor people there. And I had never been homeless in my life before, not unless I wanted to be or run away from home for a couple of days or a month or two. But for years, sleeping on the floor waiting for a record to be distributed, this doesn't happen. But I did it anyway. And that was my journey. When you go to the museum, people say, oh, Al Anderson used to sleep right there on the floor. That's what the guide says. That's what I hear.
Wow.
So that's really, that's a powerful, meaning thing for me because I came from zero, man. My parents weren't rich. You know, they're lucky to have a home. And when I left my parents to find out who I was musically and the man I would be, I ended up in Jamaica, of all places. It's completely different politically from how we live here in America. And the social environment is a smaller group of people. There's only 3 million people on that small island.
Right.
But everyone seems to know the alphabet, what makes the beats and rhythms go down there. You can't be in the wrong place at the wrong time. You can't be with the wrong political party in the right place. You can't. There's things and there's order that I had to learn. And the whole journey was worth it. You know, Bob's journey to me, before he passed, he said, keep the band together and keep writing your own material, but keep our music that we made alive. And that's why I'm coming to Connecticut to do, show people that Bob Marley is still alive. He's still here with us. He sacrificed himself for his country and the being that he is as a singer-songwriter. I'll salute him and the aftermath of his life for the rest of my life, along with Carlton Barrett, the drummer who was assassinated because he was too talented to live.
Wow.
Somebody made a decision to kill the Wailers, to stop the music movement, to stop our message. But Bob told me to carry on in his journey. He said, on my journey, just carry on these words. Keep the band together. Keep our music alive, keep me alive with the highest level of music and musicians. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm fulfilling his wishes. And at the same time, I get a chance to improv with jazz and rock and blues and all types of segues in the music that we created for Bob and my original music that I produced. 2013, I produced an album called Miracle. And we got a Grammy nomination from the 55th Academy of Arts, which I'm so proud of. because it took so much to get that record accomplished. And Bob Marley had something to do with it. The spirit of the Bob Marley and the Wailers musicians made me go on this original Wailers journey, because Bob left this group to be organized by the proper people. And then the lawyers, the liars, and the accountants stole all the money and left a lot of desolate musicians in despair. So the original musicians weren't getting their royalties, weren't getting their money, didn't have an opportunity to express themselves, because it was a financial thing. They wanted the Wailers' fame, and they wanted their money.
Wow.
And they got it. They achieved that agenda. But there's guys like me who went outside the grid, who tried to reform the group with all the original members, and they said no. So I'm the only original member in the original Wailers. And the reason why I call it the original Wailers, it's from the intent of Peter, Bob, and Bunny. What they taught me, how this music is made and how to work around songwriting from a Puckomania background, scat background.
Yes.
Puckomania, scat, African rhythms is what reggae is, and South American rhythms is what makes reggae music. These people influenced me to follow this music instead of my own music here in America, which is jazz, pop, R&B. I'm more involved with reggae music and Bob Marley and the Wailers music than anything, because that's what I support.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and wow, what a life you've led, brother. You know, your testimony is powerful. It's interesting because, you know, Jamaica and a lot of the Caribbean nations, you know, got their independence very quickly, you know, and so they held on to a lot of the African, you know, African culture. And that's what you speak.
Absolutely.
That's what you're speaking of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? That Bob had that. The Wailers had that wrapped up, and many artists embraced that in Jamaica, which made it a wonderful Nashville type of thing. Studios were everywhere. Songwriters were everywhere. Rappers were everywhere. Rap and all this stuff that you see these guys carrying on and scratching, that all came from Jamaica.
Yes.
Cool Herc was the first cat to scratch.
That's right.
And make it known he's Jamaican. Right. I talk to him and his sister all the time. Cool Herc is a mentor and an icon in this whole reggae, rap, R&B thing that's going on today.
Absolutely.
So without him and Bob Marley and these people like this, it would have never happened. Because they were the forefront runners way back in the day that made it clear that we're going to make conscious music with a conscious mind and voice.
And it was sound too, man, because I grew up in Brooklyn myself, right? And I remember I remember Reese Beach, man, where, you know, that for the first time I saw these big sound systems, man, that, you know, with all the bass, man, and
oh,
you know,
man, all those cats were from the Caribbean. All those cats that started that.
Exactly.
Who else? Biggie Smalls, who else? For him, he's a young one.
Yes.
Who else? There's Herc.
Heavy D.
Slick Rick.
Yep.
Heavy D.
Yep.
All these cats were Jamaican. Slick Rick was from Caribbean. A lot of those rappers are from Caribbean backgrounds. Who else? EPMD. They're all from, and if you notice, those were the cats who heard toasting and rapping at an early age before you and I did, who were homegrown Americans, that if you had a Caribbean background going on, that means it was jerk chicken, and ackee and saltfish, and some sort of dub music with a rock steady beat to it.
Yes.
And so that's, they changed the beat.
Right.
Dennis Brown, Bob Marley, Gregory Isaacs, Robbie and Sly, Third World, Inner Circle.
Yes.
Steel Pulse, Oswald. These are the guys who changed the beat that were hit from Jamaica, along with Heavy and Cool Herc. They changed it. These are iconic figures. And I come from all of them.
Wow.
They influenced me to be the electric unit that I am within myself. They were the grid that kept our batteries running. Because we was always listening to some hip shit that was coming out of it.
Right.
Wherever in New York that was from some Caribbean background.
Well, my brother, I want to thank you, man, for, you know, allowing us to get into your world, man. I think there's been an education not only for my audience, but also for me. You know, I can relate to it, you know, most definitely. I sort of lived it. And, you know, but thank you again, man. And, you know, we're looking forward to seeing you and the group on October 9th at 8 o'clock at the Richfield Playhouse.
We're going to be on our best behavior and do our best for y'all, because we're representing Bob Marley and the Wailers, Al Anderson, formerly of Bob Marley and the Wailers, Peter Tosh, the original Wailers, Wailers. It's all one family. Peace to all the Wailers and peace to the gods in Connecticut. Thank you, sir, for giving me this opportunity to voice my opinion musically and spiritually. God bless you all. Looking forward to seeing you in Connecticut, y'all. Original Wailers, Seaside.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.